The views expressed on this podcast are only those of the individuals featured on the show and do not in any way reflect the official policy of the United States government.
You are listening to the Embassy Wealth Podcast. We believe wealth isn't just about finances and money. It includes health, relationships, and anything else that makes you excited to get up in the morning. We interview members of the foreign affairs community to see how they're building wealth, both personally and financially, no matter where they're posted. This is your host, Tanya Salsa. Let's get to today's show. Welcome to the Embassy Wealth Podcast. And today I'm very excited to welcome Stephanie Toler from Nest DC to the show. And Stephanie, I asked to be on the show, not because she's actually a member of the foreign service community, but because she is on the other side of the table and helping a lot of foreign service families with their properties in DC. So Stephanie actually coached women's college basketball for a number of years before joining Nest in 2015 as a leasing specialist. She's actually now the CEO. So that's a whole story there. But she's the CEO of Nest, and she's joining us today to talk about managing one of your most expensive assets, your home. And I have lots of questions for Stephanie, but Stephanie, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tanya. Thank you so much for having me here. I'm pleased to be here. I'm happy to talk about Nest and how we can help your foreign service clients.
Yeah. And I mean, Nest is really incredible. I mean, just the progression you had mentioned when you started in 2015, that there were about 300 homes under management, yep. And now there's 1,400. And that's all just DC, right?
Correct. Yeah, we are just in DC. We do serve all four quadrants and have expanded over time, but we are currently in DC. Yep.
And how many people work at Nest currently?
On the Nest side, we've got a little over 40, I would say. Mm-hmm. We are part of Flock, which is the umbrella company. And so there are more employees under the Flock wing, but Nest specifically about 40.
Okay. And yeah, lots of foreign service clients actually use Nest for their property management when they go overseas. So my first question, I guess, to start the interview off is, you know, DC is a place where there's a lot of older homes, right? I mean, Do you guys see a difference when people are potentially buying a home? Does it make a difference if the house is really old or really new in terms of what it's going to cost them over time?
It can make a difference. I mean, the biggest thing is the condition of kind of those fundamental pieces of the house. You're talking the HVAC, the roof, and we'll get into all the preventative maintenance, but those are things you really want to look at in terms of the age so that you can try to gauge how much, you know, how many issues you're going to have when either you're living there or if you have tenants or residents living there. The types of problems that are going to come up are obviously going to cost depending on where the house is when you purchase.
So you don't see like specific types of problems more often in one type of house versus another?
No, I mean, the houses themselves, I would group together, are much different than condos. When I was first starting at Nest, I don't think I quite appreciated the difference between condo living versus living in a house and the types of issues that can come up between the two. So our houses usually come with a lot of wear and tear. They come with, you know, a lot of maintenance requests over time just because people have to get used to living in a home versus living in kind of your more luxury apartment or upscale. We have a concierge at the front desk. You've got someone to file a maintenance request to. You've got someone who can handle those requests, you know, same hour, same day. It's a lot different than living in a home and having to maintain the yard, maintain the gutters. And that is kind of the biggest thing that we see in terms of having a resident move in.
And you guys manage both condos and single family and actually small multifamily too, correct?
Yes.
Do you see a big difference in terms of the maintenance of condos versus houses? I would assume that condos are a little easier, but is that the case?
That is 100% the case. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And so all, you know, those condo fees that people are paying for do go to something, which is you don't have to worry about all of those maintenance issues. It
Absolutely.
Sounds like.
There are less. I mean, what we see though, a lot in DC, you've got a lot of the, single family homes that have been converted into condos. Mm-hmm. I always tell owners when I meet with them, those 1 to 2 to 3 unit buildings still live like homes. Right?
Okay.
And so that is truly a difference in what you should expect if you are purchasing a 1 unit in a 2 unit condo association. Mm-hmm. That living is a lot different than living in, let's say, a 50 to 100 unit high rise building. Mm-hmm. And so I always kind of warn that you're going to have to be probably more involved. Even though it is a condo, you're going to have a significant amount of more maintenance requests than if you were looking at those larger buildings.
Interesting. And that's even if they've completely gutted it down to the studs and like redone it?
potentially what typically happens in those brand new flipped units is you'll see the first year or two as the house is being quote unquote broken in, there will be more maintenance requests. Mm-hmm. And so after that 2 to 3 year period, then the house really you've gotten in, made sure like the pipes are all good, you know, there's less leaking, but they do take some time to break into.
Do you see anytime like in the district, because it seems like there's so much condo development going on, right? Like yeah. new condos constantly, either like larger buildings or people converting like the old row homes, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
Do you see a difference in the quality of construction of like, for example, you know, something newly built versus something built kind of earlier, like maybe, you know, 1930s or 1960s, 1970s? What's the quality of construction like? Because sometimes, you know, we have clients that are concerned about, you know, flips can be done not so well. Sometimes the construction yeah. is just thrown up overnight. Like, is there a way that people can tell that the construction is quality?
I mean, you want to obviously have the inspection. I know that's hard in DC when you're purchasing a home because those inspections have been waived for, you know, the past few years. But I would say...
But not anymore.
Not anymore.
Things are changing.
Things are changing.
Yes,
and you would know better kind of in that upfront process than I would since we enter the relationship a little bit later. But I would say it's really hard to tell. I mean, there are some great, great developers out there that I know, you know, do a fantastic job on the construction. And then I think there's some that just move very quickly. Mm-hmm. And we do see some leaks and different things that happen and issues that nobody wants to deal with after spending so much money on the front end to purchase a home. So I would say the inspections being back is a great thing and making sure you're just, you know, getting eyes on it from someone who knows best and can really look at everything.
And, you know, it's somewhat hard because if you're purchasing a condo, you assume that the association is managing the bigger building structure for you. Is there anything people should look out for in kind of a bigger building? Because again, most of those inspectors, they're just doing inspections of the individual condo unit, right? Is there a way to tell like the bigger building has issues? Because a lot of times those are what cost people down the road.
You should be able to find what has been done in the past within the building and really seeing if there is any upcoming, are there any upcoming projects that are on the horizon? How much does the building have in reserves? What are the big projects that have been done over time? And that should all be disclosed. Mm-hmm. And so looking at that would be really helpful to see and kind of evaluate the condition of the building.
And when clients come to Nest, for example, and they say, hey, I've got, let's just say, a condo or a house that I'd like to rent. Mm-hmm. What's sort of your process in terms of people getting the place ready, like if they're going overseas?
Yeah.
Do you have like a specific checklist or things that you would recommend in terms of getting their house ready?
Yeah. So we are a bit different in terms of property management. So we're kind of, Nest is that all in one, very inclusive. We try to take the property from A to Z. So once we get keys, we're going to do everything from the onboarding to the turnover, walk owners through getting their basic business license, getting the unit ready for tenants, finding those tenants, and then handling it while the tenants are in place. So what we'll typically do is once owners have everything moved out of the property, our turnover team will go in and make that checklist that they can give to owners. Mm. So residents in the city typically do expect for a fresh coat of paint to be on the walls, carpets, if there is carpeting, for it to be, you know, cleaned, mm-hmm. Handles tight, appliances to be working. So we'll go through and do those pretty specific checks. And if we do have anything to flag, we'll put it there. Typically, I would say a condo can be up to a full day to turn. Houses generally 1 to 2 days to turn. Anything beyond that, we usually don't see. But yes, it all just really depends on the house.
And when you say turn, does that mean like you go in there and then you get it ready in a day mm-hmm. or 2 days? Oh, wow.
Yes.
That's pretty fast, actually. I mean, your vendors can get in that quickly?
Yeah, it's a 2-man team that we'll send in. And so they tend to be able to work through it because it's a pretty standard checklist. I do laugh because I always say that we're responsible for the majority of properties that we've managed in DC to be agreeable gray. It's a Sherwin-Williams paint color.
Yes.
That is. So our guys know exactly what they're going in and they're going to get it painted. They're going to patch whatever needs to be done. And a lot of times owners will, I would say the month or two leading up to leaving the space, will create a list to give to us that we can include in that project price. And so if our guys, we know we're going to be there for a day or two, a lot of times owners will say, hey, we are going to take this TV with us. Are they going to be able to patch and paint behind where the TV, when the TV comes off, right? Mm-hmm. And so we can hopefully help owners be able to just leave the space. And then we come in behind them and get everything ready. So really, they only have to focus on where they're going, and not having to, to get anything done at the house.
No, it's nice, because then you can just be like, here's the keys, I'm getting on a plane, thanks.
Yeah, exactly. And that does tend to happen. I mean, we'll drop a lockbox. They can leave the keys in the lockbox, so they don't even have to meet with us.
Perfect. That works too. Yeah. What about people who are overseas and, let's say, have a tenant that turns over? Is that process any different?
In terms of if we had not been managing at that point?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we can do everything over the phone. Everything is signed electronically for us. And so what we'll do typically, same process, we would just want to get in to see the space while the tenant is there. So they would obviously have to let us. If the tenant has left and let's say the property is vacant for a period of time, we'll just go in and do that same process without the owners there. And if there is anything that needs to be hauled away, we'll handle everything for the owners. Yeah.
And then given that you've seen, 7 years of like the life cycle of a property, do you see, things that owners should or shouldn't do? I mean, like things that like maybe you spend a little money on that really kind of help save money over time so that people, because a lot of times people go overseas and I mean, they really don't have eyes on their house, right? And they're kind of like, well, tenants are paying, I guess everything's fine. And they come back in 7 years and they're like, wow, what happened, right? How do people prevent that?
Yeah, I mean, maintaining it over time is really helpful. We do periodic walkthroughs. If an owner ever does want an extra walkthrough or wants to get eyes on the space, we can do that. We'll always recommend things to get done. That doesn't necessarily mean an owner has to do them. But if we see something, we will say something and we will recommend. But we do have preventative maintenance program. And I would say that's the biggest thing, is just to get your HVAC checked, get the gutters cleaned, maintain the lawn. There are a lot of things where it's, relatively speaking, less money over time. And not let it add up to the end where you're a resident. We were talking about this earlier, where all of a sudden we're in January and the heat goes out because no one has checked the filters. No one has done, periodic checks to make sure and to plan for replacing that HVAC or replacing the boiler. So we hate to break that news. It's the hard maintenance.
Shout out
to our maintenance team at Nest and Starling, because it is one of the hardest jobs. You are always problem solving and really going to owners to say, hey, this is... No one likes to have a maintenance problem. The tenants don't, the residents don't like it, the owners don't like it. And so we really try to approach it as we are just constantly problem solving and trying to get everyone to the best possible solution. But that preventative maintenance is key over time, and just getting your eyes on this, getting someone's eyes on the space to make sure it's being maintained.
So what if you have, like, let's say you have an older HVAC system, I don't know, maybe it's like 12 or 14, but it's been working fine and you've been maintaining it. At what point do you suggest a replacement of something that works perfectly fine? Because I mean, I always feel like, well, the inspectors go in and they say, well, this HVAC's only made to last, I don't know, 15 years or something, and it's on year 14. And, you have all the service records from the prior owner from, I don't know, the time they bought it.
Yep.
Do those types of systems tend to outlive those kind of suggested manufacturer warranty dates? Or what would you suggest to an owner in terms of like at what point they should replace such a large system?
Oh, not until that you're actually having the issues. If things are going smoothly, ride that out until you're going to have an issue with it. And then a lot of times, even if there is a place, like I'll give you an example, my refrigerator freezer stopped working. So I had one of our appliance techs come and take a look at it. And he was like, we're going to try this. It's a $200 part because the next step is going to be a replacement.
A
so
new
let's
fridge.
Give this a shot. We're going to go for it. And I'm telling you, if it lasts for 3 weeks to a month, like we'll be good. If not, then we're ready to replace. And so it's doing that for every issue that comes up, right? Is there a less expensive fix that we can do right now that's going to potentially buy us a significant amount of time? If not, then we're going to communicate that. And we're going to say, we can go this route. Do we want to do the cheaper option now and risk, potentially in a month, we have to spend some more money, or do you want to just go ahead and replace it now? I opted for spending a little bit of money, and then I'm prepared in a month if he comes back to me or I go back to him and say it's not working, that we're going to replace. But that's usually what we would recommend, and we'll work with owners individually on those decisions. Now, if owners are overseas and they say, I absolutely do not want to get a call that the freezer went out, the HVAC is out, whatever the case may be, we can go ahead and make that decision and replace it. But we can move so quickly now that it's really not, it's not a big deal to give that a shot and then have to replace later.
Do you find that there are certain appliances, as various very specific question, but I don't know about you, but it seems like the appliances that they make these days, they're like dead in 5 years. Like I can't tell you how many dishwashers I've been through, and you know,
washer dryers. Yeah.
Washer dryers too. Like, dryers especially. Yeah. And I'm like, why do they only last 5 years? I feel like, you know, my parents still have their, you know, 1982 Maytag. I kid you not. It's still in their house. It's like a workhorse. And I have another set of clients there in Arlington. And when they moved in, they're like, oh, these are really old. I said, but they still work. And I bet you they're going to work for the next 20 years.
Yep.
Do you find that's the case too? Like the older stuff works better? Is there any brands or anything like that people should be aware of? Or is just sort of
I think that is a common notion that the older tend to outlast the new. If I could give one piece of advice, it would be, I mean, everyone has their preference on appliances. Do not buy something that is incredibly custom, that is made overseas, that is, you know, just really hard to find parts for.
Okay. So
we spend a ton of money and we have to break it down to owners that residents really don't care that the fridge is an X, Y, or Z brand. Mm-hmm. Does it work? Right. And I think a lot of times when owners are moving in, you're living in the space and you're very particular about how you want to live in that space. Mm-hmm. We want residents to move in, stay, and live there for as long as possible. What you typically see and what we usually tell owners is 4 to 5 years is going to likely be the longer end of how long a tenant would be able to would stay in place.
That's pretty long, actually.
That's very long, right?
It's very long.
And you do want the space to turn over after that, because you do want a refresh to maintain the house. You want to get in there, clean the carpeting, get the bathrooms ready, maybe do some light upgrades. And that after 5 years, that tends to be the cycle. Mm-hmm. And I will say you can raise rents too,
right?
You can raise every year, but we do a minimum of a 12-month lease at mm-hmm. Nest. And so we are unfurnished minimum 12 months. And I wish I could give you more data on how the average length of a lease for us, but for a house, 2 to 3 years, mm-hmm. likely on average. For a condo, you could see that 1 to 3 years mm-hmm. because there's just more turn in a one bedroom or a studio.
Mm-hmm. And so it's generally true, right? That the smaller the condo is, the higher the turn.
Yes. And then particularly over the last 2 years with the pandemic and folks being indoors so much, people wanting and needing more space, wanting mm-hmm. and needing that outdoor space, even a den or somewhere where they can have the home office, like that trend has kind of, we've seen that over time. The smaller spaces just are a bit harder to visualize.
And is that still continuing even though the pandemic, well, I'm going to say it's over. At least it's in the rearview mirror. I know. I'm like, I don't want to look around and you know, have it come back. But for the most part, it's in the rearview mirror. Do you find that those trends are still kind of staying, where people don't want smaller spaces?
I don't think it's staying as much as it was during that period of time. Mm-hmm. But I do find that people have been, you know, accustomed to wanting that outdoor, wanting the home office, because work has just changed for so many people. I know our work has changed, and I was having this conversation with someone the other day that I don't envision that we'll ever go back to a time where everyone is in the office together at the exact same time.
Let's hope not.
Yeah, everyone is that hybrid. Everyone wants the hybrid. Everyone needs the hybrid. And so we are certainly there. Yeah, mm-hmm. we're certainly there in doing it, but it has changed the look of folks working from home.
So if somebody is overseas and they want to self-manage their property, I think, you know, from my experience, the maintenance piece has been the most difficult. How would you suggest people go about doing that if they don't want to use a property management company? I know, funny question for a property management company, but what are things that they should look out for? I mean, let's say they're halfway around the world and they're trying to manage their, you know, DC house. What kind of things should they do?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, because we do have a lot of people who come to us and say, you know, I've got someone that I know in the space, so I don't need the other portion of it. I just need certain things from you. And mm-hmm. Nest is kind of that all encompassing property management company. If you are self-managing, I would say making sure that you have your license, making sure that you have a legal rental in the city is super important.
Yeah. And why is that? What happens if you don't have a license?
They will come and fine you. Yeah. You do not want to get a fine down the line.
What are those fines like? Do you know?
I've seen plenty of them in my time. What will happen is a tenant, worst case scenario, not to scare anyone who's listening to this, worst case scenario is your tenant gets unhappy about something. Maybe you're overseas, you didn't respond to the call that the heat went out fast enough, right? And that tenant becomes unhappy in the space and they decide to pursue against you whatever complaint they want, the DC will send out an inspector. And if you do not have the proper licensing, there is a fine that would be applied. And so it is navigating those things are something that we have had to do over time, obviously with the volume of properties. It's just not fun. Anytime you're trying to, you want to make a tenant happy, you want to please DC government, you want to get all the paperwork. It's just easier to have it set up ahead of time. And so they have made it easier. Most of it can be done online. And so I would say looking into that and making sure you are properly licensed and have done what you need to do to protect yourself. That is going to be number one recommendation. Okay. Number two would be just having that open line of communication with a tenant and an understanding of here's what you can expect from me. Please reach out to me via email, via WhatsApp, whatever the case is, to tell me about the maintenance issue. And here's what you can expect. Creating the list of vendors that you can go to. So who is your plumber when you're overseas? Who is a handyman that you can call on to go? Are they licensed? Are they insured to make sure that you're covered? And kind of just having that short list of people that you can call that you know will respond quickly is very important. And then again, the preventative maintenance. So those would be the things I would say, your short list of vendors, and then being able to put some preventative maintenance in place so that you know, I've got the HVAC covered, I've got the gutters being cleaned, I have a landscaper, and I know that those things are happening. And we have a long list of preventative maintenance that we recommend. It's just custom to the house. Do you have sump pumps? Like all things that we would want to look at and make sure are being taken care of. The other thing that I would say is that we have another company called Birdwatch, which is separate from Flock, and Birdwatch is a maintenance solution. So Birdwatch Pro would be for homeowners like you're describing who do not live. Birdwatch was born out of being property management for homeowners living in their space. So if you are a homeowner and you're living in your unit or your home, and you want someone to do all of these things, you want a one-stop maintenance solution. You log into your Birdwatch portal. You tell us what's going on. It can be the tree in the backyard that fell. True story, that happened to a Birdwatch client. It could be it fell on their house, actually.
Oh, God.
It could be, no. I know. Yeah, no, never fun. No. It could be that the dishwasher is leaking and you need someone to come out and handle that. I can tell you that my five-year-old put a roll of toilet paper in the toilet one morning, and so as we were heading out to school,
kids,
and
never boring.
And I said, "Okay, Birdwatch, I need our plumber to come by the house because I don't know I'm going to come home to this, but I don't want to." And so that is number one. It's for homeowners. Number two, it's for homeowners who have an investment property, do not want to do the maintenance for that. You may have residents in place. You may have a family member there that you want maintenance to be covered. They're not going to do it. We're not going to do anything else through Birdwatch. We're not going to do finances. We're not going to handle
lease
tenant.
Lease
it out. It's not for that. It is strictly maintenance.
Interesting.
And so that is something if owners are overseas and are like, I know who's living in my house. I don't want to pay for A to Z property management on a percentage basis because that's what Nest does. And they do want just a flat fee for Birdwatch. That is also an option.
And this is a really interesting service because myself as an investor, like, I mean, I could handle a lot of the communication and the tenant placement and all that, but the maintenance drove me absolutely nuts because I was going to ask you, what are your tips to find good vendors? Because sometimes you find a vendor and they're great for a while and then all of a sudden they're not great and they won't answer the phone.
Yeah.
Or you'll find somebody, they're like, yeah, sure, I'll be there. And then they don't show up. And then you're like on the phone chasing them down. Like, where are you? You know, you were supposed to be here. And, you know, short of asking people all the time for good, you know, recommendations, how would you recommend people find good people to work with on the maintenance
side? I mean, word of mouth in your community, right? Like going to, I know a lot of folks I see go on Facebook and are like, hey, I need a recommendation for a plumber. I need a recommendation for this. That is one option to find someone good. I mean, you can go even to Yelp and see, like, as much as I hate to say it, like you can see who's gotten great reviews and you can give them a call and kind of test the waters there. It's really where Birdwatch, I think, has carved out this very unique unique space where people need great vendors. And we have both in-house plumber, handymen that we can send, or technicians, I should say, that we can send to solve issues. And then we also have a deep bench of vendors that we've built over time. Mm-hmm. And so we've kind of got both ends covered. But if you find someone good, if you find a great vendor, it's do everything you can to hang on to them because it is really hard.
It's
out there.
Hard. It's hard. Yeah. I mean, after 10 years in the real estate space trying to manage my own properties, I'm still cycling through like trying to find the right people. And since, yeah. And then sometimes they're really good. And then you lose them. You're like, oh man, like, ah, who am I going to find? So
when a lot of it is trust too, someone comes over and they say, you know, that you need to do X, Y, or Z. And I, I mean, even I've been overseeing maintenance for the last 4 or 5 years. I'm like, and I still, even in my house, I'm like, oh no, I really just want someone that I trust to come in and tell me what's going on.
Yeah. I mean, because I mean, labor is not cheap. I feel like prices have been rising across the board. Is that generally what you're seeing too?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we, and goes back to the conversation of why maintenance is so hard. I think owners, you know, if you've been accustomed to paying one price for one service, we're having to break it to owners every day, and our team has to break it to owners every day. That did cost this 2 years ago. Now it's
not what it costs anymore
because of parts, because of labor, and we've got to adjust. Yeah, uh-huh. Not fun.
I mean, do you think now that you know interest rates are higher, that market is cooling a little bit, and there's not this frenzy to just gobble up all of these houses. Are you seeing that at all in terms of like pricing on the labor side, or is it just holding steady?
It's holding steady because every single homeowner that I've spoken to has had that same story that you're explaining of like, I've had someone good, they're gone. I've had another person and I can't, and it's a 3 week delay to get them out. And that is just causing this backup for maintenance in the market.
And you know, it's funny because I don't know if any of our listeners out there have watched Dirty Jobs with Mike Rowe. I actually really like that show because he goes around and he like, you know, he's like, oh, today we're going to do this dirty job. And a lot of it is like, you know, maintenance. And, you know, one of the reasons I like that show too is like you really see, you know, what life is like on the other side. But at the same time, I'm like, it is so difficult to find these people. And one of the things he talks about a lot is that there's a whole generation of electricians or plumbers that are just not there, right? Because like there's an aging population of master tradespeople.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the problem of like you can't get new people in the industry. And so costs go up because there's so few people and we're all chasing the same good people. Mm-hmm. Do you see any relief in sight for that? Because I feel like it's not, I mean, and maybe it's a problem that doesn't affect everybody, but I think across the board, it's just hard to find good people. And right now I think the labor market's tight anyway for all kinds of jobs, not just service jobs.
Yeah, 100%. No, I agree with that. I mean, unfortunately, I can't think of anything that would give me peace of mind necessarily that this problem is going to be solved anytime soon. Mm-hmm. But I know we're trying to get creative with looking at different trade schools, different programs that are developing younger people who maybe want a different path and want to, you know, college isn't for them and they want to go into the trades and learn an apprenticeship program we're going to build out with our master plumber.
Cool.
And so for Birdwatch. Yeah. And so we're trying to do some fun and maybe creative ideas to get some opportunity in the door for people who may not have had it otherwise.
No, I think that's amazing. Cause you know, DC is a super brainy town and like, mm-hmm. there's a lot of people that, you know, I was talking to Lisa Wise and she was like, yeah, there's so many people that they'll do their spreadsheet and like, they'll figure out all of these things. And then it's like, well, then who's the person that's going to do those things?
Who's doing the thing?
Right. And then like a lot of stuff that's like just sort of like simple handy tasks that people used to be able to do in their house. I don't know, at some point, like, I don't know how to do them. Right. I mean, thank goodness my husband is a really handy person and knows all these things, but I would be lost trying to just, you know, like I couldn't find the reset button on the garbage disposal. I was like, where is this stupid thing? I'm like crawling out of the sink. Like, I'm like, yeah.
The thing is that everything, I would tell people, look on YouTube, right? Like YouTube is a wealth of knowledge. There's so many ways that you can go find some information for some basic things, but it takes time.
It does take time.
To want to do that and to want to explore that. And I think as everyone that I know, and I'm sure everyone listening, like the to-do list has just gotten out of control with things to do. Time is where you just don't have it anymore.
Most valuable, precious resource we have is time, right? And frankly, I don't want to be spending my day underneath the sink.
And both Nest and Birdwatch are really set up to try to give homeowners back their time in whatever respect they are. If they're overseas and have a resident and just don't want to be getting those calls, mm-hmm. or if they're living in their home and they're like, hey, I don't know how to reset the garbage disposal and I don't care to know.
Yeah.
Please come and do this for me, right? And while you're here, fix the light bulbs, you know, paint the trim, do whatever needs to be done.
Yeah, because I mean, otherwise you're staring at the stupid light bulb that you can't get to because it's like at this crazy place and you're like, I have to get a ladder. Like, I'm not, no, it's, or it's on the stairs or, yeah, just no. No, no, yeah. No.
Exactly.
So let me ask you another question about leasing. So how do you guys determine, for example, how much to raise rents every year? It's a question I get a lot as a landlord, right? Like, so, oh, I've got this great tenant. Yep. How much do I raise the rent? Do I raise it every year? Do I, you know, peg it to some kind of like, I don't know, people get very nerdy, consumer price index or something. I was like, whoa, wait a minute here. But I mean, what's sort of your policy in terms of like raising rents on tenants? Do you raise it every year? Do you wait? Do you ask owners what they want to do? What's your philosophy on that?
Well, there's a couple things. We do ask owners. So part of that process in terms of releasing or renewing a tenant's lease is to say to the owner, hey, are you interested in, are you moving back in? What are your plans for the home? Do you want, obviously in DC, if you're listening, DC tenant law, certainly know that before you go into renting out your space. But tenants have the right to go month to month. So giving owners, first of all, are you planning to move back in? That question is number one. And then if they say, no, we're not, we'd love to extend for another year. Or yes, we don't know what the future holds, especially for this foreign service population. We'd prefer to go month to month. And so once we know that, then we look at the pricing. So do you want to raise the rent? It is the owner's decision to make. What we will weigh in on is for a year-long lease, typically 2 to 4% is what you will see as being digestible from the resident standpoint.
Okay.
You have great tenants. You do not want to risk losing them. I would
agree
100%. Do not risk losing them. And sometimes tenants will feel like, oh, I've taken care of this home as if it was mine. And I could be offended, right, by raising the rent on them. So in that respect, I would say weigh your options of either vacancy, another 90% leasing fee, keeping that tenant in place, 2% is not worth it, right?
Right.
And so kind of weighing those options are really what goes into it. If they're going month to month, you could go up to 4 or 5% over time, month over month, because there is more of a risk, obviously, in that tenant leaving at any point. One piece of advice that I always try to give, because it is kind of a puzzle or a game, so to speak, if you are renting in the winter, getting getting your tenants to sign an 18-month lease.
Yep.
Because the cost is going to be down, right? You're going to not make as much money because really leasing goes on kind of a hiatus around November because everyone is eating turkey and then celebrating the holidays, and it's going to come back around in February, let's say. So if you get stuck in that time, it is not the end of the world. I met with owners for years. They would say, is it going to rent in January on January 1st? Yes. Tenants move all times of the year. So it will rent. Tenants, though, do know that they can negotiate in pricing.
Yes.
You're going to get hit with, will the owner take $200 less? Can you come down to X, Y, or Z? Being prepared for that conversation and then negotiating and saying, I'll come down that 100, but I want the 18-month lease out of it to get you to come up in a summer cycle, well worth it. And so certainly having that in mind could be helpful. And so all of that kind of goes into that pricing and timing. And you can only raise rent one time per year. So I'll go a little bit in depth and say, like, in a scenario where, let's say, your rent is up in December, allowing the tenant to go month to month through April, and then offering a 12-month lease at a higher rate could keep you.
A little bit of strategy there.
There's a little bit of strategy behind it, which our team works with owners on. But if you're going the self-management route, just kind of understanding what would work best for you and what's going to maximize your income is helpful.
Nice. No, I think that's great advice, you know, because I think a lot of times when you get stuck with something in the winter, you're kind of like, what do I do with it? And that's been, you know, my experience as well, is I try to make it a bit attractive, but then I try to do that longer lease for people for sure.
Yeah.
So awesome. Well, I am curious how you got from leasing specialist to CEO and property management. It's not for the faint of heart, and that it's just not that kind of industry. It's not the industry where people wake up every morning and they're like, I'm so glad you are here, my property manager. Although I try to give my property managers love all the time because I know it's a very difficult job. Before we wrap up, tell us a little bit about how that happened.
Well, I would say I laugh because I did get I have a master's in counseling, and I used it when I coached women's basketball in college for many, many years. And the drama in women's basketball and property management are probably fairly similar. And so who would have thought? And so that counseling degree has served me fairly well in both aspects. Uh-huh. But I would say, I approach this job very similar to what I did when I was coaching a team, which it is all about the team. And so Nest does work in teams. It is we are 100% have each other's backs. And every conversation, I always tell owners, you're going to see many names CC'd on an email. That is because we work very heavily in teams. That is for coverage.
Communication is important.
Yeah, that is for coverage. That is for support. That is for backing, because different situations can be incredibly challenging. And so just always coming with that coaching mindset, and trying to problem solve. Like, it has really been a learning experience at Nest. And I was initially attracted to Nest because of Lisa Wise. And if you don't know her, please, please do some research on Flock.
Amazing lady.
Amazing lady. New book out called Self-Elected. And we really try to, at Flock, do as much good for the community as we do for our individual clients. And that is something that was really important to me, is just making sure that we were impacting people's lives in a positive way, whether it's the clients, whether it's the community, and whether it's our own employees that I work with every day. And so kind of taking that energy into the property management space is kind of a game changer. There's not, I don't think, anyone else who does it the way that Lisa had envisioned and the way that we approach the work.
No, 100%. I mean, you guys are so involved in the community and giving back to the community, not just financially, but like through events, through support, through, you know, fundraising. I mean, there's a whole foundation piece, right?
That
Lisa is is working with and on. And I mean, what an incredible story, right? I mean, like, Nest started very small, but it's become this big, amazing thing. And it's really, I think, a DC fixture. And it's a testament to all of the work that you guys have done over the years.
Well, thank you so much. The team works incredibly, incredibly hard. And we have fun with what we do. It is, every day is not easy, as anyone who knows property management can attest to.
No.
But we do have fun. Yeah, we do have fun. And when you make it about more than, it's more than just, you know, the toilet breaking. It is, it is really about, like, how can we make every day better for the people that we're serving? And that includes my plumber who's going to work on that toilet. That includes the resident who is affected by it. And that's making sure we get the best price for our owner. And yeah, all of those things coming together is really incredible to see.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning, Stephanie. It's been amazing to hear.
Awesome. Have a great one.
Take care.
If you like this episode and want more, make sure to give us 5 stars on the podcast player of your choice. And after that, check out our Facebook page. From there, you can learn about our other episodes, connect with our guests, and of course, share your own ideas for success. We'll see you next time.